Welcome to the POCUS Journal podcast. My name is Dr. Amar Jory, and I'm joined today by Jamie Galen, as well as a couple of our guests, to talk about a recent article from the April issue of the POCUS Journal. It is my pleasure today to present the article entitled The Pegasus Games, Physical Exam, Gross Anatomy, Physiology, and Ultrasound Games for Preclinical Medical Education. This article is by Mary Hennekes, Sarah Rahman, Andrea Schlosser, Anne Drake, Tessa Nelson, Emily Hofberg, Robert Jones. And today it is my honor to mention that both Emily Hofberg and Robert Jones are joining us. Gamification engages learners and has successfully taught POCUS to residents and fellows. Yet ultrasound curricula in undergraduate medical education remains limited. This study assessed a gamification model integrating ultrasound anatomy, physiology, physical examination, and radiology created for preclinical medical students as compared with traditional didactic education. Dr. Galen, can you take it away from there and engage with our honored guests today?
Dr. Jory, thank you so much for getting us started. It is so great to be here with Bob and Emily, if I may. First of all, congratulations on your study. I think that medical education research and medical education research in point-of-care ultrasound is so important. It's a labor of love and takes a lot of work from study design to IRB and evaluating learners. And it's just so important to do. And I thank you for advancing the field and adding to the literature here. I just want to start by asking you to introduce yourselves. I don't know, Emily, if you want to go first and just tell us about you and you know, what your how you got interested in ultrasound and how you got involved in the study.
Sure. Yeah. So I'm Emily Hofberg. Like you guys said, I'm a rising fourth year here at Case Western. I'm currently interested in applying to OBGYN. I kind of first got involved with ultrasound on a whim, I guess. I've always been very interested in anatomy. I was a physiology major in college, very focused on thought I would do surgery for a really long time. And I kind of wanted just a different perspective of how to look inside the body. And Dr. Jones, you know, announced to our class about his ultrasound elective. And I applied to that thinking, you know, it'd be a great way to have a hands-on learning experience and get that different view and that different perspective than just lecture-based learning. And I was 100% right. It was a wonderful way to really learn anatomy and also, of course, point of care ultrasound.
Outstanding. Thank you so much. And Dr. Jones really needs no introduction. He's really a leading educator in point of care ultrasound and researcher and clinician. But it's great to hear from you about yourself and maybe even a little bit about how you got interested in ultrasound way back when.
Well, thank you. It's great being here. This is now about 32 years of doing point of care ultrasound exams. So I am, just as a quick background, I am an emergency physician at Metro Health Medical Center in Cleveland, which is the county hospital. I'm a professor of emergency medicine there, and I am also an assistant dean for clerkship education at Case. So I think my defining POCUS moment came when I was a resident, and we had a trauma fellow who was visiting from Germany. And I remember one night I was on a night shift, and he came walking into the trauma bay with radiology's ultrasound machine. And we were all like horrified. It's like, is this guy a thief? What is he doing? And it's like, what are you doing with this machine? And he said, I don't get you guys here. And this was probably in 1990, 1991. He was like, back in 1988, this was part of our training. To be a surgeon, you have to be proficient in doing these clinical ultrasound exams. And even in the late 80s, I remember before it was even called a FAST exam, he was doing these exams on trauma patients saying, why are we going to do a DPL on this patient when we can just look right now? I remember even back then, he diagnosed a small bowel obstruction And I just thought, this is unbelievable. This is where medicine needs to go. And it was right at that time that ASEP had their very first ultrasound course that was taught by Dietrich Yaley. I went to that and I said, I'm sold on this. This is what I'm dedicating myself to career-wise. And 32 years later, still love it.
Wow, that's really inspiring. It's incredible to hear about what it was like back then when things were getting started. And thank you so much for your contributions to this field over the last 32 years. It's really neat to think about medical students having a chance to learn ultrasound in undergraduate medical education. And I think so many other areas of medicine are so behind emergency medicine in terms of involving ultrasound in their practice. So I'm interested now in getting into the article, sort of understanding a little bit about the background of how you decided to study, your curriculum here, and okay, what how the curriculum fit into your elective, and a little bit about how you evaluated the curriculum and chose the thyroid to be the subject of the initial evaluation there. So some of that, I don't know if Emily, you were involved in the study design or just implementation of the study or collecting data, but tell us a little bit more about that.
I could start if you want, and then I could let Emily take over. So what I really noticed is, as I started doing this elective, is that the students craved games as a way to learn. That, yes, they learned when you stood up there and you did a lecture, they watched a PowerPoint presentation or some video that you recorded. But I think games is what really stimulated them. When they heard, we're going to do a game at this session, it was just like their eyes lit up, and it was like, they would come in extremely well prepared for it, because it's like, we want to win this. We want to win this. And one of the things I noticed is that when the students would go to a lot of these national, ultrasound games, they really weren't, tiered towards what their educational level was. So they may be competing against a third year EM resident. And as a first or second year medical student, you don't understand necessarily the management of, here you're being presented a case at one of the stations. So here's somebody in hypertensive, crisis, and they've got, flash pulmonary edema. As a first year student, you're like, I don't know what that means, but it sounds good. And so what we did was we really shifted this and made it focused on what a first and second year student really needs, and that's anatomy and physiology. So hence the name Pegasus. And what we did was we tweaked it so that these games all really emphasized what a first and second year student needed. And I can let Emily, from her perspective, say what that meant.
Yeah, I mean, I think everything you said is just so accurate. Being a part of the ultrasound elective was probably the best decision I made in med school. It was just such a great time, such a great learning experience. And I have other classmates who weren't part of that cohort that so regretted not applying into the elective because of just how much I rave about how wonderful it was to learn in that kind of environment. When I first got involved in the study, it kind of had a bare bones design of, we're going to be looking at, because we've been playing games for years, right? And how do we really evaluate that for first and second years, which is what Dr. Jones has been doing, just not in a really formal manner. So I came on and really helped get down to the nitty-gritty of developing the games and implementing the questions. And Jamie, you mentioned a labor of love. It very much was. It is hard to design games. I think that's a big barrier to this, because it does take a lot of effort. But in terms of the material, we did the thyroid and neck anatomy because that's what the students in the first year class were learning at that time. Our anatomy curriculum does overlap with our lectures and things like that. So we tried to kind of coordinate that to make sure that the students would have a cohesive learning experience. And we tried to do games that people were a little bit familiar with, that we kind of tweaked, like Taboo, where you're not allowed to say certain words, or Ball Toss, which a lot of students have played. And then just making them very simple questions, both based on ultrasound and on neck anatomy or thyroid physiology. What probe is this versus, how do you identify the internal jugular vein? So yeah.
Got it. So just so our listeners, you know, they have the manuscript to read online, but just so they understand, if they're listening, you had 20 first year med students. They had were split into two arms, the game arm and the non-game arm. But in terms of what they got as curriculum, both groups got a lot of ultrasound training. It's just that one group had games as part of that curriculum, and then the other, the non-game group, didn't have any of those games. Did they have anything in replace of that, or they just had the sort of didactic parts of the curriculum, if I'm understanding it correctly?
Yeah, so everyone did have similar instructional videos that they would watch at the beginning of each session. And then the non-game group, they instead of having a game that they would play, they had a designated facilitator who would go over those same questions that were involved in the game.
I see.
But they had a script that they were teaching more in a lecture style format. So it is more the traditional teaching lecture format versus asking those questions and playing a game in order to reinforce that material.
Yeah, what I really like about the study design is that, unlike a lot of ultrasound, you know, manuscripts that evaluate a group of learners with ultrasound and a group without ultrasound, what this does is it really isolates the game element of it as far as a med-ed tool and controls for that, and then evaluates those two different groups to try to understand the benefit that games would have in a formal curriculum. And I think why that's so important is that I think medical educators that are a little more traditional, that aren't used to the concept of gamifying medical education curriculum, they're sort of leery of it because they think it detracts from some of the seriousness of the way, you know, med school was some time ago. But I think, you know, today's med students really benefit from it and enjoy it, and that goes a long way towards their participation. And it's so important that you evaluated the game part as a controlled component of the study design. So along those lines, you evaluated the two arms, you know, in multiple ways. Can you tell us a little bit more about how you evaluated the game versus non-game students?
Yeah, so I mean, everyone had a test that they took at the beginning. And also, just to say that everyone was POCUS naive or ultrasound naive. Everyone had had less than 30 hours of ultrasound training. Most of them had had less than 10 hours. So everyone was starting off at a similar baseline. And then we administered a test to see, you know, what kind of previous knowledge they had. And we didn't find any statistically significant differences between those two groups prior to the study. And then after completion of the session with the game and non-game group, we did have two different tests after the study, one very close and then one a little bit later. We did have pretty good turnout in terms of people completing those. And we found that the game group was a little bit better on the immediate post-test, and that there was no difference between the scores on the post-test that was delayed between the two groups. But the thing that also, and so, you know, we can't say with this study, we did have a very small sample size. It's important to mention that there wasn't a huge difference in actual fund of knowledge gained in the end. But what we can say is that everyone who was in the game group really enjoyed their learning experience, and that they reported such positive feedback, and that they felt that they had a stronger mastery of the material. And I think that as a student, you know, confidence goes a long way and enjoyment of what you're learning goes a long way. So I think those are the biggest takeaways, at least for me, looking at this data.
I think that's great. I think that conclusion is what I think a lot of readers will take away, that adding the game was more enjoyable, and that the buy-in and participation is so important. Like you mentioned, that, you know, many med students don't attend lecture anymore, and you know, I think that the desire to attend and be with their peers and learn with their peers in small groups in fun ways, it really keeps them engaged.
I have a question, actually. Sure. What do you think is the motivator behind these students performing better immediately post-test? It's a very interesting psychologic aspect that's been shown in other types of learning modalities. And so I realized this was not necessarily a psychologic analysis, but from your reading and your familiarity with the research, what is it that allows better performance in this context?
I think some of it is the enthusiasm that goes along with this and their desire to learn this. So, I mean, looking and trying to apply it to this study is hard because it's, you know, small numbers. And always the hard thing too is when you're designing these things, are you really skewing this that you're kind of, you know, designing things for the test so that you know that, oh, I can get the results I want with this. So there always is that potential for bias, but I think it's the enthusiasm. I mean, I watched, because I was kind of the observer in this, but I clearly saw a big difference in, you know, in how the students were engaging in the game part versus traditional learning part. And I heard some of the students that were in the traditional learning part say, why didn't I get into the game part? They look like they're having so much fun and they're standing there in their small group getting a lecture on here's the thyroid cartilage, here's the cricothyroid. And they were like, that kind of level of disengagement, just looking at the other group going, that is so much fun. So I think that plays a huge component. And, but there is, like you had mentioned, the stigma with this, that some quote unquote, you know, serious educators, they don't like the term games because it just, they feel belittles what they're trying to do with education. And I know some people have switched to the term serious games so that it emphasizes that it's just a modality to, you know, educate, that it's not meant to be, you know, it's not necessarily the fun. It's, you know, getting them to learn something while they're doing something that they're enjoying or they find, you know, you know, that they really like.
And right. Can you give an example of a game, like, for example, during a thyroid teaching session? What exactly was different between the groups?
I'm sorry, I'm not quite sure I understand your question.
So I think just to tell us a little bit more about the you had three game stations, like ball toss, taboo, and pin the tail on the M2. Can you just tell our listeners a little bit more about what the game arm got while the non-game arm was experiencing a more traditional didactic curriculum?
Sure, yeah. So ball toss was a game where we had students stand behind a line and toss a ping pong ball into a cup. And there was a group of cups and each cup had a question on the bottom that then they had to answer correctly in order to, you know, remove that cup and move on to the next cup and the next question. And if they got the question wrong, they would replace the cup and they have to make the shot again. So the questions could be, you know, something about what, you know, is the orientation of this ultrasound image, you know, is this superficial or deep? Because remember, these are ultrasound naive learners. Or it could be something, again, about the thyroid, you know, identify this structure and it's a picture, you know, it could be like the isthmus. So those were the kind of questions for that game. And then for taboo, we did, you know, word associations where you would get an image of something and one person would have the image and the rest of the team had to kind of guess what it was without saying certain things like, oh, this is a CT or this is an ultrasound, and they were image-based problems. And then for the last game, Pin the Tail on the M2, we had M2 volunteers that would, you know, we would do, this was mostly physical exam-based, so things like finding the thyroid on a physical exam or the location where you would perform like a cricothyroidectomy, like to get that correct, and then you would use the ultrasound to verify your placement.
If I may, for our listeners, you know, the game called Beirut or beer pong, which is played across many college campuses. Dr. Jarry, my co-editor chief, is in Canada. I do believe this is, you know, a North American and beyond you know, college aged game. So it's not limited to the United States per se, but beer pong, you know, is something that they clearly would be familiar with from the learners. I know it wasn't described in the methods, whether, you know, we know about their ultrasound experience, but we don't know about their beer pong abilities before the study. But suffice it to say that I think reaching learners in this way and to make it fun and in a way that would be familiar for them is really, you know, clearly illustrated in the curriculum that you provided, but also in the way you evaluated it, to see that the game group, you found that the game group, you know, clearly enjoyed it more. So I was going to say in response to Dr. Jarry's comment that a crossover, or actually, Bob, you were saying that they were jealous, you know, a crossover study design where the non-game users eventually got to also play the thyroid version of beer pong might be more fair in the future. But randomization, you know, is important, and one group doesn't always get what the other group does. So it's understandable. Along those lines, tell me a little bit about sort of the next steps, what you might be thinking, you know, or some colleagues that are see your study and the way you designed it, you know, what they may be looking to do in the future for different content areas, or are there different games that you're also working on, you know, evaluating?
Yeah, I also do want to really quickly go back and address the fairness between the two groups, game versus non-game. We did actually also put together an escape room for our study participants. It wasn't a part of the study, but we did want to have some of the non-game participants get involved in some games and have a little bit of fun. So we did a whole separate escape room at the very end that we didn't actually record any data from, but we had puzzles and a couple other things involved. We had some M2s acting as patients they had to interview, and it was a whole lot of fun, and they really enjoyed that as well. So we did kind of toss them that extra little tidbit at the end.
Perfect. So they weren't punished for being the control arm.
Right. And then to answer your question about, you know, future directions, we've actually implemented these games and well as added others, not in a study setting, at our annual UltraFest that we put on here at Case Western. We had a really great turnout this year. I think we had a couple hundred students from Case as well as some other schools in Ohio. We had faculty from the different hospitals in the area that came and worked as facilitators. And we did this in half the day was traditional didactics. In the morning, we had a guest speaker and, you know, very general academic. And then in the afternoon, we played games. And we did use these in different material. We had some MSK sections where we kind of did a whole map of the body, and we did a muscle beach area, and we did the renal river, and we did some kidney games as well. We have also some procedural skills that we do in a game fashion where we'll do central line placement on phantoms, and we'll do it in a relay race. Yeah. And that's really fun for everyone as well. And we've had just a resoundingly positive feedback from our UltraFest days.
We've kind of modeled it, but I do want to say one thing real quick. Even though Emily said it was last year, just to be clear, so no one thinks that we violated some COVID, it was in January of last year, right before COVID hit. So we did not have a super spreader event. So we've kind of...
Yeah, I was wondering about how the COVID-19 era may have challenged some of this for you guys.
It's really hurt us in a lot of ways with some of the in-person. I mean, we're still able to do things like, you know, with Kahoot, or we're able to do things with like online Jeopardy games, but I think still that kind of interaction, the personal part of things, is what people really are longing for. And I think we're going to see more of that, you know, once, you know, some of the restrictions get, you know, kind of relaxed a little bit more. But kind of the bigger picture that we want to go to with this is really almost like a magic school bus. You know, I remember that as a kid, loving that, you know, as that bus goes in and it takes a tour around the body. So our medical school is set up in this big, you know, rectangular shape that what we've done is, you know, kind of a search through the body that there are different parts of the building that represent either the GI system, the cardiovascular system, the pulmonary system, and they go from one place to another, and they'll have targeted games, you know, for their educational level. The one thing we're still trying to get the school to allow us to do is have tricycles in the building, but they're afraid of injuries related to tricycle accidents. So people have to walk from station to station, but we're still working on that. So, but I think the thing that amazes me the most on this is how faculty who may not have embraced educational games a couple of years ago are now really starting to see the light behind this. And I can just think of an example. We were talking about one of our obstetricians and a game that they created where, you know, the escape rooms where you have to, you have to solve something and then you go to the lock and you hit the code number and then you get a key out and you can move further. They were doing it with cervical dilatation. So you have to go and you feel three different models. And then it's like, okay, 5 centimeters, 2 centimeters, 6 centimeters. There's my code 526. And then they move on. And so it's just incredible what people can think of as, to make these games and make educational, but, fun experiences for the learners. And I think that's what the whole point of this game was, is that, you can design these at the appropriate educational level. And while, we didn't prove anything, evidence-based necessarily because of size, clearly this was non-inferior. And from the Likert, students liked it. And there's nothing wrong with, doing it this way. There was, I think that the students, it was just as educationally beneficial. Wouldn't you agree, Emily? And the students liked it, so.
And I will say that another goal, at least that I have personally, I'm very interested in medical education and continuing that as I go to residency. And something that's really great about these kinds of games is you can modify them for different material. And this is something that I want to take, the structure that we've built and share this and move forward to kind of apply to more fields. And we presented this at an Innovations in Medical Education conference in California, and I had so many people come and approach me and say, can we get your materials? Like, can you, help us make our games? And I think that was just so great and so refreshing to see because, people are, like Dr. Jones is saying, getting more and more interested in this, and students definitely love it. And now that faculty are moving in that direction, it's just really positive.
I'm going to ask one sort of hard-hitting question, but thank you so much for exposing the article and on all the different elements of the study. This is not that hard-hitting, actually. I'm curious, though. We're talking about how the opposition, if you will, feels about gamifying medical education at all levels, UME, GME, or even CME. And one of the limitations, or not limitations, but results that you pointed to that I think does leave us with some room for improvement is durability of the result. So you mentioned that the game arm didn't have a sort of over time, I forget the time interval when they were reassessed, but that maybe there was an immediate impact on their confidence or their skills, but that it wasn't durable. And that's a problem that we have in medical education in general, but in ultrasound education particularly, is having learners at different stages, keep up the skills. So I'm curious. My question for you is, how can we deploy games to our curriculum and have it, be durable? What do you think would be not even necessarily in future studies, but what are your thoughts about how to, maybe to have the games involve weekend activities more, like having sessions that repeat over time, or, how do we solve that problem going forward? It's not all on you. It's not all on you. It's on all of us. But
yeah. I think a lot of this is going to depend on the learner. And I think that's the biggest thing, is knowing your learner. That even amongst medical students, you may have a cohort of students at your medical school that receive this totally different than our students do. So kind of, applying a, one size fits all may not work. And I think the other thing is really from the faculty standpoint is not overthinking the game. Sometimes people think, for me to do this, I've got to go to an escape room and create something so professional and so elaborate with pirate hats and all this other things that if I don't do that, it's not worth doing. And that's really not the case. I think that, you know, understanding who the learner is, what they're trying to achieve, starting off simple, I think will go a long way. And the students appreciate that effort and, you know, kind of that, you know, serious game approach, I think, starting off and then building on that. So how I look at it is, you know, every time we do a game, I see what sticks and what doesn't. And if something doesn't stick, and I may have thought, oh, I love this game, but then they're looking at it like, ugh, that really, and you can see their faces sometimes. It's like, no, I'm not really digging this game. Then I adapt and I move on to that or from that.
I wonder if it's also a matter of having variety within a curriculum. Mm-hmm. That's what it made me think of when you were, when you and Emily were talking about this, is that it might be nice that you have a traditional didactic and then you have something that's gamified as well throughout the day. Whereas, you know, having a full day of didactic can be emotionally exhausting. Yeah. And I'm sure having a full day of gamification is probably emotionally exhausting. So it's probably not only the learner, but the context in which and the curriculum in which it's employed is probably useful, sort of the spice of life, I guess.
And I think when, you know, earlier we talked a little bit about the psychology of it. And I think part of the reason from my just thought process of why people in the game group did better on the immediate post-test, to me, it feels like they have a stronger association, that memory of, oh, I remembered having fun doing this thing or this funny thing happened during the game. And therefore I remember what question that was. And, you know, like anything in education, repetition is so important. And I do agree. I think the variety and the didactics are important. Everyone's a different type of learner, but having some repetition, having some games to kind of really tie things together, I think is just very useful. And that kind of excitement, maybe it doesn't stay with you for a long time, but it does initially. And if you put that in enough, then you should be able to remember your information.
Perfect. Okay, now I get to ask the really hard-hitting question. So why is it that ultrasound, in whatever medical field, you know, POCUS, ultrasound, why does it attract people that like to have fun? So, you know, I don't know that everyone knows about the Sono Slam and Sono Games, but I don't know correct me if I'm wrong, but do the toxicologists in emergency medicine, you know, have games at their annual conferences? Probably not. I think it is
emergency medicine. I mean, look at that, you know, Sim Wars and everything else that they do. I think it's emergency medicine. We love games. I mean, I think that is part of our makeup. And so I'm going to attribute it to emergency medicine.
Okay. And your answer is
short attention spans.
Well, I think, you know, I'm part of a crew of internal medicine, you know, hospitalists who, you know, do ultrasound. And I thought it was self-selecting among them that they, you know, like games or like to have fun. But it's interesting. I think ultrasound is growing in its own way in so many medical fields. I was curious, and Emily, you'll have to let us know if the point of care ultrasound folks within OB, you know, who are doing more than just, you know, obstetric scans, you know, that are really, if it attracts a fun group of people that like to learn in new ways and develop new curriculum and those kinds of things. So.
Well, I think it does attract anyone who likes to be hands-on in their learning, mm-hmm. and anyone who is interested in procedural skills or anything with their hands, you know. And I do think that the high energy type of people in emergency medicine definitely are attracted to ultrasound. But I mean, I can talk about so many of my classmates who are interested in so many different fields who love ultrasound, and because they love the human body, you know, and it's just a great way to experience the body in a different manner.
Outstanding.
I was going to say, you know, Emily is, you know, obviously still early in her career as a med student, but she's talked about this, you know, finding other like-minded OB-bound, you know, people that are interested in games so that, you know, that they can work and collaborate on that. So hopefully there are those that are, you know, listening to this and can reach out to her. And
outstanding. Well, thank you both so much for your time this evening to tell us about your important work in this area. And I encourage all of our listeners to check out the paper on pocusjournal.com and also to follow Bob Jones on Twitter, who's incredibly prolific and an excellent educator on that platform, as he is, I'm sure, in so many other forums. So Bob, your Twitter handle again, I'm sorry.
It's R Jones Sono EM, and Emily's got her Twitter handle too.
Yes, my Twitter is just my name, Emily Hoffberg. Please follow me as well. I'm not as prolific as Dr. Jones, but I would love to be one day.
you'll get there. Well, again, okay. Thank you both again so much for your time, and we'll be sure to include your Twitter handles with our tweet of this to the podcast. So,
thank you so much. This has been so lovely.
I just wanted to thank Dr. Galen for organizing this interview, and Dr. Jones and Emily. So as mentioned, the Pegasus Games article is available at pocusjournal.com. So please take a look and download it for the details. And thank you for joining us on today's podcast. We will hopefully have more podcasts with the next few issues. An important point I'd like to mention is that our next issue is going to be a renal focused issue with respect to point of care ultrasound. So Dr. Galen, would you just like to give a quick summary of this upcoming issue that we're putting together?
Well, without giving it away, I will say that we have Nephropocus, which Abhilash Kortala is our guest editor with his colleague Nathaniel Reisinger at UPenn, who together they really have built an incredible list of research and cases, and it's a renal special issue of the POCUS Journal coming out. So that's all I can say right now.
Great. We're all looking forward to it. Thank you. All right. Thanks again, Dr. Jones and Emily, for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.